Chapter 53. Half an hour ago.
"You're sure?" Harrow Hark said.
"Of course I'm not sure," said Dulcie Septimus. "But I'm a necromancer of the seventh house, or I was when I was alive. Abigail couldn't have felt what I felt when we both looked outside. I'm not an expert with revenant spirits, but I know a little something about puppeting. And your body's not being puppeted, Harrow. Something is moving it around, and not a fragment. It's not the ghost, either, because it didn't feel anything like the sleeper."
Those blue eyes watched her very carefully as she stared unseeing at the facility walls, at them buckling beneath the enormous pressure from above, the whole castle doing a neat controlled demolition on itself, folding up and changing as though caught in the grip of a giant fist. The rips at the side, the huge rents of wall and partition, had begun to alter in a way she had seen before. They no longer looked out into darkness. They looked out into the same white, hard absence of place and time that she had seen within another bubble. A tintless, abyssal wound, her mind's contraction, her limits within the river.
"It may mean nothing," said Dulcie.
Harrow Hark heard herself asking distantly,
"Why did you tell me?"
That rueful smile again, like the shadow of old joy.
"Because I wanted you to know all the truth," said the dead daughter of the seventh. "The whole unpackaged, slipshod truth. Truth unvarnished and truth unclean. Pal and I were always zealots in that line. I got told so many lies over my life, Harrow Hark, and I didn't want to go back into the river, having myself committed the murder of the white lie. Please understand, I'm being selfish, but I wanted you to know."
When she looked into Harrow's face again, and how it had changed, she said simply,
"I'm sorry." "There's a difference between keeping a shred of dance card," said Harrow Nona Jesimus, "and saving the last dance."
Another corridor clenched in on itself. Sanitizer's entrance deformed, and the ceiling suddenly sloped downward at an arresting angle, sending things shrieking overhead. The roof opened like a cloudburst. A huge flank of tile fell down over their heads. Harrow Hark backed up against the coffin, and the wasted, hot-eyed wraith before her blew her a dry-mouthed kiss and disappeared under a cloud of rubble, smashing metal, and a soft shimmer of blue. Harrow's heart was beating as though it never had before. She thought it could not beat in truth. She was her own dream, and her heart's whirring simply another fantasy of the subconscious. But nevertheless, it hammered. Hard. She said aloud,
"No, I'm getting out of here."
She stood before the coffin of the sleeper and gathered those white, soft, solid rips in her hands, and she popped the bubble, and the river came rushing in. It came down around her in shreds, as light and insubstantial as drifts of spiderweb. The water sprayed through white holes, rushing in with a pounding roar, that brackish, bloodied water that only existed within the river. She was buoyed up by a spray of ice water and filth, but she wasn't. She seemed to be walking down her long black corridor again. Then Harrow was back drowning in salt water. Gideon's arms were around her. They were in the pool of Canaan House, and she had just been ducked by her cavalier. She had held her breath instinctively, though she had been serene at the time. To drown, she thought, was softer death than she deserved. And back then to die in Gideon's arms had seemed entirely correct. She could feel Gideon's fingers digging into the small of her back, could feel her shirt billowing in the pool as they sank to the bottom in a tangle. Harrow's head broke the water. A thin skin of ice shivered apart as she emerged, panting for air, her skin burning with the cold. Her flailing sent ripples along those black, disturbed waters, but did not interrupt their gentle tidal lapping along the jagged shore. Above her head, the rocky cathedral of the cave shone with a dismal heaven of luminescent worms blinking softly on and off. They were all undead, revenant creatures and watchers, shifting restlessly forever on the rock of the locked tomb. Harrow was home. Harrow floundered, not toward the shore, but to the island in the centre, to the black mausoleum of glass and ice, sitting silently and reflectively beneath the sea of dead worms. She hauled herself to shore and lay there, skin crawling, frozen half-solid, shivering and numb in that strange heat, presaging hypothermic death. And yet Harrow felt no pain. She felt nothing, in fact, but a welcome sense of homecoming, the strange, tiny, pleased familiarity of finding an old book once beloved or some other antique of childhood. Eager now, she hauled her freezing meat to stand. She passed beneath those pillars as she had as a child, followed the pathways she still traced in dreams. She was exhausted more than cold, her head filled with the soft, heavy tiredness of too much waking and not enough sleep, of a long day on the job without rest or break. She walked into the mausoleum, and she approached the tomb itself. The chains in their great holes were snapped and broken. The ice crawled up the sides of the empty altar. Within that bed of ice and glass, on the stone-shaped pillow to prop the head, that final resting place of Harrowhark's one true love, lay a sword. It was the two-handed sword that had lain at the bottom of the sleeper's coffin, just as Dias had seen it. Harrowhark had come home, and she was not afraid. She did not know why she did it, but she climbed inside that empty coffin, and she took the sword within her arms. She was filled with a drowsy, comfortable certainty, as though, rather than an icy tomb, she had been tucked into a bed with a pillow fluffed beneath her. Her eyelids felt as heavy as the chains that lay broken around the outside of the bier. The sword she embraced shamelessly. Those 6 feet of steel held no fear for her now. Something rustled at her side. She had not seen it when she climbed in. It had been tucked to one side of the coffin. When she reached out to hold it in front of her face, she found a shiny mass of magazine flimsy. The crumpled front page showed a woman in a cohort uniform that was so far from official, it did not merely strain credulity, but snapped it in 2 pieces. A white jacket at least 3 sizes too small, boots, and nothing else. The ice felt kind and warm. The stone gave as though it were cotton. Harrow lay where the body had lain, perfectly at her ease, perfectly comfortable, and she peered blearily at the header. "Frontline titties of the fifth," she read, and found she was smiling helplessly to herself. She murmured, "Nav, you ass, that's not even a real publication." Then there was a huge side-to-side rocking in the manner of an explosion, or a cradle. Her eyes closed. Lying in the tomb that had claimed her heart, far away in a land she had never travelled, Harrowhark Nona Jesimus fell asleep, or dropped dead, or both.